been listening to Health Radio.
Well, if you're still listening to this record, that's a pretty good indication that you're ready for tweeting.
Here's Melanie Cole.
Hey, we're back today. Welcome to Health Radio. I'm Melanie Cole, and we are streaming live worldwide. If you want to call into the show, be a part of it, ask a question, you can call into 877-711-5611 or send me an email, melanie@healthradio.net. And I always respond to my emails or read them on the air. So yesterday was fun, wasn't that? Vocal show. I got to do a little fun testing, speaking up in my registers, and that was kind of fun. So I hope you all learned something from that. And of course, we know we're going to learn something today. I've been looking forward to this show. On my show today, I have Dr. Jen Berman. She's a licensed marriage and family therapist in private practice in Beverly Hills, no less. And she wrote the book, The A to Z Guide to Raising Happy, Confident Kids. Welcome to the show, Dr. Berman.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
Well, you know, I like to brag that I read the books. I do. I read the books, and I read your book.
Well, thank you. I'm glad to hear that.
Well, I loved it, and I actually caught myself, like, oh, looking at the clock and saying, I've been reading here for half an hour or an hour, and how did I take this time? Because I have a four-year-old and a seven-year-old.
Well, I'm thrilled to hear that you read it and that you lost track of time and enjoyed it.
I absolutely did. Some of it I agreed with, and some of it I did not. We'll get into some of that.
I look forward to hearing about both of those
things. Oh, yeah, well, I mean, you know, I think you seem to really know what you're talking about.
Thank you.
And it was definitely entertaining. Tell me, tell the listeners what you think are the single biggest mistakes that parents make. And then we'll talk about some of the ones I agree with and not.
Okay. I would say that one of the most common mistakes that I see these days, and I think it's very specific to this generation of parents, is that a lot of the time now, parents are working so hard to be their kid's friend because so many of us didn't have parents who were friends. And in doing that, oftentimes they abdicate their role as parent. And kids really need parents who they can be open with and who they can confide in, who can be a confidant, who can really be there for them and can be a safe person for them. That said, kids need parents to be parents, and they need parents to maintain a boundary and also to set down some rules so that kids know what's expected of them. So that I always think about it this way. If I'm driving on the road, the lines on the road and the stop signs and the stoplights help me know where I'm going. They make me feel safe. If you took all that out, I would be terrified to drive the roads. And parenting is the same thing. Your child feels safest when there are rules and there are they know exactly what's expected of them. Because truthfully, kids, especially younger children, they inherently want to please their parents. And kids really need to have those guidelines and those boundaries to feel safe and to thrive.
Well, I so agree with that. And I think, in my opinion, one of the other big mistakes that parents make is this over-involvement problem.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And it's important that kids have the room to make mistakes because that's how we learn. And it's also important that kids are able to suffer the consequences of their actions. Because if parents are always saving their kids from feeling any pain or any suffering, their kids aren't going to be very motivated. And, you know, unfortunately, there's a certain amount of suffering, and obviously I'm not talking about physical abuse. I'm talking about, you know, I forgot my lunch, and in that moment, mom can easily say, oh, I'm 10 minutes from school, I can bring your lunch, or she can say, you know what, you're really resourceful. It's a bummer you forgot your lunch. I'm sure that you can find some other kids at school who will give you some food, and I'll make sure to have an extra big snack ready for you when I pick you up from school. That kid's not going to forget their lunch again. The kid whose mom keeps running to school to drop off that lunch, they're going to continue to forget their lunch and not learn responsibility.
Well, you're right about that, except for that I cannot imagine not bringing him lunch.
I'm a parent too.
It would break my heart. Oh, to think of my little guy sitting there with no lunch and maybe other kids making fun of them. So I suppose to be that kind of parent that you're discussing,
mm-hmm.
you have to get over that worry, that need that we have to put them in a bubble and protect them from everything.
And you know, and I'll take it a step further. It's not just that you need to not take them out of the bubble and protect them, because you don't want to throw your child to the wild wolves. But what you do have to think about is, what are the long-term life lessons I want my child to learn? I want my kids to learn to be really responsible, and I want for them to feel like they can take good care of themselves. And if my child keeps forgetting her lunch, and I keep showing up at school with that lunch, she's never going to learn to remember her lunch. And it may seem like, oh, well, who cares? When she's 30, she's not going to forget her lunch. But the truth is, it creates a certain kind of thinking in that child that years later can become much bigger. It can be, oh, you know what? I didn't study for the test. Mom will write me a note. She'll get me out of the test. And we want to raise responsible children who can take care of themselves. That creates self-esteem.
Well, that's right. And we want to create that self-esteem. And tell me, do you think that we are over-involving? I mean, where I live in the North Shore of Chicago, people are so involved in soccer and music and drama and baseball and, you know, so involved that the kids don't have time to read, to hang out, to play, to do whatever.
I agree with you, and I think that that's really a national epidemic. We have children all around this country who are just so overscheduled. And in my book, The A to Z Guide to Raising Happy, Confident Kids, I have a whole chapter, the V chapter, V is for vegging out, all about how to let your kids have downtime and why that's so important. And I think that you're absolutely right, because kids need to have some space to get to know themselves. They need to have time to recharge their batteries. And also, if kids are going from class to class, they don't have the time to sit with themselves and get creative and get inventive, which I think is a very important part of cognitive development and also emotional development.
Well, and I think one of the problems my husband and I are facing right now, besides the financial responsibilities involved in signing kids up for all these things, is the fact that I'm lazy. You know, I work a lot of different jobs, and I'm busy all the time, and those things take commitment by the parents.
Big time.
But sometimes I'm upset when I see things like in the Boy Scouts and such, you know, the kids are supposed to bake the cakes, the kids are supposed to make the go-karts, and some kids come to these little competitions, and you know they had it machined.
Of course.
And the cake was bought by some bakery or made by their mother.
Yep. And I gotta tell you, one of my biggest pet peeves is when it comes time to sell Girl Scout cookies, and these little girls are saying,
I know what you're gonna say, Dr. Berman, it's my hugest pet peeve.
Yeah, I overheard on a radio station, a mom called a radio station in Los Angeles and said, my daughter's selling Girl Scout cookies, and I want to offer to the station, and they had, you know, hundreds of people calling. Well, what has her daughter learned? Has her daughter now learned to be an entrepreneur, which is really the real reason why we want girls selling Girl Scout cookies? No, she hasn't. She's learned that mommy will take care of things for me.
Oh,
and that's the worst lesson that kids can learn.
It's so obnoxious. You know, I called a neighbor on it once.
Good
for you. Because they came with the oranges and grapefruit.
Yes.
And they came to the door and asked me, called me on the phone first, then came to the door for the check, and then they delivered it. And not once during the whole process did the child who was selling them in high school come to my house, write me a thank you note, or involve herself in any way. So when the father came to deliver it, I said, you know, I'm happy to do this because I like the grapefruit, but I must tell you, I'm very surprised that I haven't seen her once during this process.
And what did he say?
He said, well, you know how it is. They get so busy with school. He was a little offended, and they didn't ever ask me again.
Sure.
Because
I wonder what would have happened if you had said when they called, oh, I'd love to buy the grapefruit. Isn't your daughter selling it? Just tell her to give me a call. I'd be happy to speak to her
That would be the way to say it. Oh, have her give me a call. I'd love to discuss it with her.
Yeah. It's amazing to me. And I think that kind of behavior is it's symbolic of the bigger problem that parents have as far as taking over their kids' lives and making everything right for them. And look, I'm a parent. I don't want to see my daughters in pain. I understand the sentiment behind it, that it comes from a place of love and caring, but what most parents don't realize is that they are handicapping their child by doing that. When your child doesn't develop the ability to fend for herself and to take on age-appropriate tasks,
you're handicapping them.
Yeah.
Now, we have to take a break, Dr. Berman, but we have lots and lots. You and I could be on for hours, I'm quite sure. So when we come back, we will talk more with Dr. Jen Berman about raising happy, confident kids on Health Radio in just a minute.
I'm a paramedic, and it may sound silly, but a lot of people are afraid to call me when they're experiencing chest pain, or to call 911 if they're with someone experiencing chest pain. You know why? Because they think it would be embarrassing if it were a false alarm. Instead, people risk permanent damage or death because they're afraid they might get a lecture. That's ridiculous. So if you have an uncomfortable pressure, fullness, squeezing, or pain in the center of the chest that lasts more than a few minutes, call me. If you have a pain that spreads to the shoulders, neck, or arms, call me. If you have any discomfort in your chest with lightheadedness, fainting, sweating, nausea, or shortness of breath, call me. If you have any of these symptoms or are with someone who does, dial 911 right away. And if it is a false alarm, I'm not going to give you a lecture. I'll be happy to see you. To learn more about heart attack warning signs, call the American Heart Association at 1-800-AHA-USA1 or visit us on the web at AmericanHeart.org.
Go red any way you want. Eat red apples, cherries, tomatoes, ride a red bicycle, leave red kisses on someone's cheek. Take a moment every day and put your hand on your heart. Make a promise to yourself to be heart healthy. The American Heart Association wants you to make red the color of an active life. Take a moment and go red for women. Love your heart. Go red today. Visit goredforwomen.org or call 1-888-MY-HEART.
What is it about St. Joseph's that makes us the best choice for all your cardiac care needs? Is it the fact that your St. Joseph's physician can guide you through a full continuum of cardiac services, including prevention, diagnosis, acute care such as angioplasty, and rehabilitation? Is it the fact that we have one of the most successful coronary artery bypass surgery programs in the state? Is it the fact that we're the only hospital in upstate New York to be named a magnet hospital? A designation awarded for exhibiting the nursing excellence that results in lower mortality rates and greater patient satisfaction? Or is it the fact that more people choose St. Joseph's for their cardiac care than any other hospital in Central New York? We'd like to think it's all these things, working together to deliver the one thing everyone wants from a hospital, a higher level of care. To find out more about our cardiac expertise, call the St. Joseph's Resource Line at 315-458-2222.
You can hear this show again or listen to the all-new online interactive talk radio all about health, wellness, fitness, and medicine. Log on to healthradio.net. Entertaining hosts, expert guests, and important information about every aspect of your health. Live Health Radio. Or on-demand podcasts. It's compelling talk radio for everybody. HealthRadio.net. That's HealthRadio.net.
To call in and be part of the show, ask a question or make a comment. Call toll-free 877-711-5611. That's 877-711-5611.
We are listening to Pulp Fiction music while we're talking about raising kids the right way. We're on today with Dr. Jen Berman, author of The A to Z Guide to Raising Happy, Confident Kids. You are tuned, as always, to Health Radio. And Dr. Berman, so
yeah.
I have a million questions for you. I want to start with, I have a four-year-old child, girl, a seven-year-old boy. He's very easy. She's really tough. She's got this very strong personality. I can't imagine where she would get that. Because I'm 4'10" and not exactly an introvert, you know. But every time lately that I tell my son I'm proud of him. Oh, you know, you read that whole book. You did so great. He's reading the
Let me guess. Your daughter gets jealous.
She absolutely says, you're not proud of me. You're not proud of me. And I understand that she's got this little insecurity. And I say, of course I'm proud of you. I'm always proud of you. How do you, like, deal with that?
But one of the things I want for you to think about conceptually, and I talk about it in the S chapter in the A to Z Guide to Raising Happy, Confident Kids. The S chapter is all about siblings.
I got it open. I'm open to it now, right now.
Perfect. And if you think about your home in terms of both of your children, your four-year-old and your seven-year-old, are both competing for the same resources. And when I say resources, I'm not talking about just the financial means that your family has, but they're competing for love, they're competing for attention, they're competing for adoration. So what you have to realize is that your daughter, she's still very young, And she hasn't quite yet learned that you can be proud of him and be proud of her as well. You can love him and give him attention, and you can then turn around and give her attention as well. So that's something that she's struggling with. And she's
I keep telling her that.
And she's at that age, but also conceptually she can't grasp it. You can tell her all you want.
Okay.
It's not going to sink in. She's only four. It's a very abstract concept for a four-year-old to learn.
Okay.
What she's going through is really normal. You know, part of understanding our kids also oftentimes is understanding child development and what they're capable of conceptually and what they're not. You know, she's at a stage where she wants mommy. She wants mommy's attention. And also, 4 years old, that's instant gratification time.
Instant gratification. Mommy, help me with this. No, no. Don't.
I want to do it myself.
I want to do it myself.
Yep.
Mommy, I love you. I hate you, mommy.
Yep.
You know, I mean, it's so, like, up and down. And I guess I don't remember. I'm the youngest of six.
Wow.
And three foster kids.
Sure.
So there was nine of us in my house.
And so you're probably very patient and used to waiting a long time to get your needs met.
Well, yeah. And so it's like, I'm just like, can you just wait a second?
And also keep in mind, a four-year-old is at that difficult stage where, even though she's verbal, she doesn't most likely have a great vocabulary and a great ability to really express the nuances of what she needs and wants. But she's at that age where she has very strong needs and wants.
Ugh.
And a low tolerance for frustration.
Because you don't want to raise a brat.
Of course not. Of course not.
It's such a scary thing to think, God, you know, I know I couldn't have been because my brothers beat the crap out of me all the time. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. And I do recommend that parents have a no-hitting rule in the house. That your son not be allowed to hit your daughter, and your daughter not be allowed to hit your son, because I've seen too many families where a younger daughter is allowed to hit the son, but then an older son isn't allowed to hit the daughter. It needs to be consistent with everyone.
Oh, absolutely, because she hits a lot harder than he does. And
yeah,
so
I'm not surprised.
She's definitely not allowed to do that. And one of the things that we go through here is my husband's older sister is so much older than him, he didn't have that sibling thing.
Mm-hmm.
So when they fight, when they whine,
sure,
I just pass it off and don't even think about it, and his whole body clenches and he tightens up.
Sure.
And so I think that some of what I was reading in your book about sibling and birth order,
mm-hmm,
and how people are and such, I want him to read this because I want him to understand the dynamic.
Sure.
That's normal. It's normal, right?
Yes. So much of what you're describing is normal. It doesn't mean it's pleasant, and it doesn't mean it's easy on parents. And I really have attempted in my book, as you know, each chapter stands for a different letter of the alphabet. I've narrowed it down to the 26 most important issues that I feel that parents need to know about. And in each one of the chapters, I've really attempted to give parents concrete tools that they can use so that they're not just kind of, okay, well, that's a nice theory, but what can I do?
Yeah, well, I mean, and that's the thing, and with some, when you talk about timing, you know, timeouts,
mm-hmm,
our parents look at that, and my dad would scoff, timeouts, that's something for, you know, your generation.
Well,
we didn't do no timeouts when you know, we dragged you away from the situation, but in a sense, it was a timeout also.
It was, and one of there's so many misconceptions about timeouts, and timeouts are often misused. A lot of the time, parents will, let's say, you know, little Janie is acting out, she throws a tantrum, and then mom says, oh, you've been a bad girl, go to your room and do a timeout. Timeout is not a punishment. What you want to use a timeout for is before things escalate. As you see things escalating, a timeout is the chance for everyone to calm down so they can think clearly. And this isn't just kids. This is moms and dads, too. Because sometimes when you have two kids who are going at it, it's hard to think clearly. And if you're able to say, okay, everyone's getting upset, it's time for a timeout. We're all going to go to our respective corners and calm down. And in 3 minutes, we're going to meet back again and talk about a resolution to this problem. That's a great use of a timeout.
Well, it is, absolutely, because when my daughter whines,
mm-hmm,
that's what gets everybody so worked up, is when she starts to whine. And now she's almost learning to herself that when she gets that way, she goes to her room,
sure,
and gets her baby doll and sits in there.
And that's brilliant. What you've just taught your daughter is how to self-soothe.
When she's
upset, to calm herself down. That is such a valuable tool to teach her, because when people can't self-soothe, they turn to food, they turn to drugs, they turn to alcoholism. That you've just given her an incredible gift.
Well, and you know what? I only came upon that because it was like, Cece, calm yourself down. You have to learn to calm yourself down, mm-hmm. you know, and it was very hard because you get worked up so much.
And at four, it's very hard for a little girl to calm herself down.
Well, it is. And
I mean, I gotta tell you, I'm in my late 30s, and it's sometimes it's hard for me to calm myself down.
I think
it's great that you're teaching her that.
Well, see, and that's good, and I know you, one of the big things we're hearing in commercials today and advertisements about the family table.
Mm-hmm.
And the importance of family dinners now, because of our schedules and everything, we eat together 2-3 times a week, mm-hmm. but we're always there with them while they eat.
Which is great.
Everything that we do involving food in this house is cooking together, but sometimes we feed the kids very healthy, great foods, and we're standing there with them, sitting at the table with them, doing book work or something, but maybe we're not going to eat until a little bit later because they need you to get up so much.
Sure.
Water, this, that. You can't relax and have a meal.
Of course. And I got to tell you, as you know from reading my book, The A to Z Guide to Raising Happy, Confident Kids, eating dinner together is one of the simplest things, at least theoretically, that you can do to help your children thrive. And what we know is that 87% of parents say it's important to eat together, but yet 30 to 40% of families don't eat together most nights of the week. And the more that you can eat together as a family, the better off your kids are. Studies show that kids who eat together with their family at least 5 nights a week have lower rates of marijuana usage. They try cigarettes later or don't try it at all. They tend to not use drugs and alcohol. They also have lower rates of depression and anxiety and even lower rates of suicide. I mean, it's such a powerful mechanism for helping our children feel loved and cared about. In addition, children who eat with their families eat more fruits and vegetables, have healthier eating habits, and lower rates of eating disorders.
Well, and that's a thing. I mean,
you
see girls today, and you know the media is such a strong influence. So it has to be the parents that keep that eating disorders thing.
It's such a combination. It's a combination, like you're saying, of that nature and nurture. And we live in a society where girls have very unrealistic pressure to maintain certain body weights, and that actually creates eating disorders. And then you also have so many moms who, in front of their children, are saying, oh, look how fat my thighs are. Well, our children internalize that. Yeah,
I did a
segment on the Tyra Banks Show not that long ago where I was working with 8-year-old girls who thought that they were fat and were all developing horrendous eating disorders. And when I met with their moms and talked to their moms, it became very obvious that these were moms who didn't eat carbs, who didn't eat fat, and who were discussing this.
Wait, hold that thought. Hold that thought, because we got to go to a break. But we'll be right back with Dr. Jen Berman on Health Radio in just a minute. Don't go away.
Take charge of your health. Complete a personalized MD Anderson prevention profile at no cost. This confidential online questionnaire takes about 5 minutes to complete. It will assess your cancer risk and suggest specific steps you can take to reduce your chances of developing cancer. The action plan includes screening recommendations and outlines of healthy behaviors specific to you and your lifestyle. Visit mdanderson.org/prevention to begin your prevention profile. That's mdanderson.org/prevention.
After I learned that I needed abdominal surgery, a lot of things were going through my mind. When you're a working mom, you can't just call in sick.
Faster, Mommy, faster!
Okay, honey. Luckily, I met with a specialist at University Hospitals of Cleveland. He told me about some techniques and treatment methods that could really speed up my recovery. I suppose it would have been nice to have a little more time off to rest and relax, but it sure does feel great to be able to take my daughter for bike rides again, and just 1 week later.
At University Hospitals of Cleveland, we're doing everything possible to help our patients get their lives back. From routine surgeries to complex procedures like brain surgery, we have the expertise and advanced technology to help our patients feel like themselves again.
Yep, there's no slowing me down.
To learn more, call 1-800-800-8447 or visit uhhs.com.
Gossip. It's all about life. Love and Health. I'm Christopher Springman.
And I'm Allison Ewing. Say, Chris, did you hear about Danny and Sue?
Oh, you mean Danny and Sue from accounting?
Yeah, well, I heard that Sue wanted to get a...
Wait a minute, Allison. Is this just water cooler gossip?
Yeah, Chris. What's the harm in that?
Well, it just doesn't seem right.
Actually, Chris, new research has found that a little gossip can be good for you.
Get out of here.
No kidding. In a 2006 study published in the journal Personal Relationships, researchers from the University of Oklahoma found sharing stories about men and women who aren't there helps people bond.
You mean gossiping about Danny and Sue helps us get along?
Right. The researchers interviewed students 3 times about what they have in common with their friends.
You mean like whether they like Indian food or slasher films or baseball or...
Yeah, or whether they like Tom, Dick, or Harry. Right. But they found what was really interesting was that people relate even more on what they dislike than what they like.
So if two people have something to dish on...
Then they've got something to talk about. The researchers did point out that nasty gossip can be hurtful in other ways, but a little mild dish helps people get along. So, about Danny and Sue...
Hold that thought. I'm Christopher Springer.
And I'm Allison Ewing, and it's all about life, love, and health. Anyway, Sue tells Danny that she wants to get a tattoo of his face.
Your teeth are connected to every other bone in your body. Having healthy teeth and gums is great for your entire body. For expert advice on the relationship between oral health and overall health, trust your dentist.
And the molars are connected to the rest of your body.
Your dentist, part of your healthcare team. A message from the Ontario Dental Association.
Business Sense. I'm Mark Chase. These days, the ability of businesses to respond dynamically and quickly to any shift in the marketplace is critical. One company is offering small and medium-sized businesses a new solution designed to help them succeed. IBM's Paul Schreyer explains.
Prepackaged at an affordable cost, IBM's Express Wholesale Distribution Solution gives small and medium-sized businesses the power to potentially improve inventory control, create operational efficiencies, and enhance collaboration with suppliers, employees, and customers.
This solution's adaptability means that you pay only once and your investment for the future is protected even after your business expands.
Working with SAP, we offer small and medium-sized companies the flexibility they need to grow their businesses through the SAP all-in-one solution.
For more information, please go to www.ibm.com/expressadvantage/insights. That's Business Sense from IBM. I'm Mark Chase.
Dr. Hirsch, to medical records, please. Orderly to admitting...
HEU members work in every area of healthcare. From caring for our seniors to sterilizing operating rooms, HEU members are essential to your care. But despite growing workloads and increased training, they were singled out for deep wage cuts in 2004. It's not fair and it's not working for healthcare. This year, let's find solutions that make healthcare better for everyone. We're the Hospital Employees Union, and we're bargaining for better care.
This program provides general information relating to health. Listeners should not individually rely on the information given here because we're all a little bit different from one another. This program is definitely not a substitute for a consultation with a qualified medical doctor. We encourage you to make an appointment with your own doctor in order to resolve any of your health concerns. Now, back to the show.
And we are back. I'm Melanie Cole, and we're streaming live worldwide on Health Radio. We're talking today about raising happy, confident kids with Dr. Jen Berman, author of The A to Z Guide to Raising Happy, Confident Kids. And it's a good book. It puts
everything
right into perspective. It definitely, I'm a fan of routines. And let me see what this chapter... Oh, it's your, I think it's the teach. Oh, no, it's J for jumping jacks.
Yeah.
Helping your children love exercise. Well, I'm an exercise physiologist, so.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah,
oh, that's
so.
That's great.
Yeah, that is what I do, and besides the radio thing.
Sure.
So, my kids see me constantly on the treadmill.
Mm-hmm.
They know that when I go off to work, I'm going to teach people exercise and work with people that have illnesses and things like that. So I think that I have a good understanding of the importance of that role model thing.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like you're doing a great job there.
Well, I mean, I hope so, because I'm, you know, I love exercise so much too. But when you've got, when you write down about whittling your child's usage of TV and videos and such,
mm-hmm.
because that's in that chapter. And
is this the part you disagree with me on?
No. I okay. definitely don't disagree. Yeah. We haven't got there yet.
Okay.
Scheduling.
Yeah.
Because you say you have to establish, you know, your limits and your usage and monitor yeah. their viewing and all this. And then it made me think of the scheduling thing.
Mm-hmm.
Some people don't keep their kids on any sort of a routine.
Sure.
So it's easy to say to the kids, you can stay on that video game for longer because
sure.
we're not ready for this yet, or we're not ready for that. And I'm always amazed at how many people let their kids stay up late.
Sure.
Watch TV late.
And what they don't realize is that when they let their kids stay up too late, their children will have poor quality sleep, and they're not going to be well rested the next day, and you're going to have cranky kids. And oftentimes parents see symptoms of sleep deprivation or poor sleep quality and don't even realize that that's what it is.
Well, and that's the thing. They don't realize that's what it is.
Yeah. Yeah, TV is a tremendous sleep stealer. And not to mention, as I talk about it in my book, that most parents don't realize that when your child sits in front of the television, we've all seen our kid get that glazed look on their face.
Yes.
Well, their metabolic rate is slowing down by 12%. And for your obese child, their metabolic rate is slowing down by 16%. Not to mention, if you let your child eat while watching TV, and this goes for adults as well as kids, but studies show we tend to eat 8 times more food if we're watching TV while we're eating, because we really disconnect from our body's signals that it's sending us. So what we end up having is these children who are lowering their metabolic rate, being exposed to things that we don't really want our kids exposed to, seeing all this consumerism and having all of these commercials saying, you need to buy this, you want that, to be cool you have to have this. And while they're watching TV, they're not being active, they're putting on weight, and then they're not comfortable exercising because there's kind of a window of opportunity for us to learn to be physical. And if you have a child who doesn't get up off the couch and stop watching TV until they're 12, they're not going to have the same coordination that a child who, starting at 5, was running around with mom and dad.
Well, that's right. And, you know, going back to a little bit about the diet thing, too, you know, in my family, everybody is big, and I've had to fight my weight all of my life. I'm, you know, tiny, but still. Mm-hmm. And I see it in my daughter, and I'm so careful. I try not to say, oh, I look so fat in this or whatever. It's hard.
Yep.
That's very hard, and I know that she's going to have the same weight issues all my sisters and mother had and such. So we feed them so healthy, but also how do I'm feeding her healthy, but sometimes she doesn't stop eating. And I'm like, honey, you got to stop eating now.
Well,
that's
but,
just too much.
But what you want to do is you want to teach your daughter to listen to her body signal. You want to ask her questions like, are you hungry right now? Does your mouth want the food or does your tummy want the food? And if she says, well, you know, my mouth wants the food, my tummy's fine, then you can say, okay, well, let's put this aside and you can have it later when your tummy asks for it. Because we really want to teach kids as early on as possible to differentiate between mouth hunger and stomach hunger. Because when she's having stomach hunger, it doesn't matter if you think she's eaten too much or not. Her body wants that fuel, and she should have that fuel. You don't know if she's going through a growth spurt. You don't know what exactly her body needs, but you do want to teach her to listen to her body and to trust her body, because that's her best chance of being a healthy weight. And look, if she has a family history of being a little more round, then you need to help her accept that that may be who she is. And part of how you do that is by demonstrating that yourself.
Well, that's right. And I think that you have to, and you all know that it's hard in this day and age for us
yep.
women not to look at ourselves and say, ugh, these thighs of mine and whatever. And your kid's standing there next to you.
Yep. But the greatest gift you can give your kid is if you can stand there instead and say, oh, don't you think my hair looks good today? That teaches your child it's okay to like the way you look. It's okay to feel good about yourself. And it's not just all about how thin our thighs are.
That's right. It is. But we know that. And it's just sometimes harder to do than to actually say, you know, don't do as I do, whatever.
And I have to say, I mean, I think that being that role model is one of the most difficult parts of being a parent, because our kids are constantly watching us. The pressure is immense. You know, I think that in a certain way, being a parenting expert has made parenting more difficult for me personally, because I know how much what I do influences my children. And I'm constantly thinking to myself, how is this going to affect their perspective about relationship? How is this going to affect their perspective on body image? You know, everything that comes up. And, you know, there's tremendous responsibility in being a parent.
There is. And, you know, they let anybody be a parent.
Yeah.
You know, you have to get a license to drive, but not to be a parent.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing.
It is pretty amazing. And now you talk also about nannying.
Mm-hmm.
You know, nannies and finding a nanny. And here's where I don't completely agree with you.
Okay.
I know what you're going to say in response to this, but.
Okay, try me.
Because I read the book. But, you know, calling references.
Mm-hmm.
I've been very lucky. In my 7 years of needing a nanny, I've gone through 5 nannies because they stay a year and a half. Mm-hmm. And then there's a fine line. If they're too smart for the job, they leave.
Mm-hmm.
If they're not quite smart enough, you don't want them there.
Mm-hmm.
So there's this very fine line, and my nannies have all been very smart, and I've been mm-hmm. very lucky, and then they go off. One of them had a master's degree with 12 credits towards a PhD.
Great.
So she was out of there.
Sure.
But calling references, especially mm-hmm. with some of the different cultural communities that tend to be nannies,
sure.
It's like, how do you know that's not their friend? I've done it one time,
mm-hmm.
Dr. Berman, but I have never felt it very necessary because it just seems to me to be such... They're going to set that up. Who's going to give a reference that's going to say bad things about them?
Well, but one of the things you do is you want to get a secondary reference.
And who gives that?
When you call that person and you say, hi, I'm calling because, you know, Susie Smith is considering being a nanny for me. So I understand Susie worked for you from June of 2002 to June of 2004. Well, the paper you've been given says she worked until July of 2004. A real reference will say, oh, no, actually, it was July. And if you say, what you want to do is you want to make some mistakes when you call and you check a reference. For example, Susie's resume says she worked for the Smith family and she took care of a boy and a girl. The girl was 7 and the boy was 5. You want to call and say, so I understand you have 2 boys and that Susie took care of your 2 boys. A fake reference is going to say, uh-oh, I must have gotten the wrong information. Yes, I have 2 boys. Then you know it's a fake reference. In addition, when you talk to that reference, you want to say, so is there anyone else who you know, who knows Susie, who's encountered her while she was working for you? Because I would like to call that person. Can I get that person's number from you? Because that person is not going to be a prepared reference. The deeper you can go, the better off you are. And it may sound like, oh, how can I expect a parent to do this? But when you leave your child alone with a virtual stranger, you want to know that you have done everything possible to protect your child and make sure the person who you have in front of you is the person who you think that they are. I had actually a friend recently who didn't do that and had a nanny try to walk off with her child, and it's believed that the nanny was trying to sell her children to someone else.
Well, now, it is so scary. You know, you hear all these horror stories, but isn't there, and I've hired a lot of elder care as well,
mm-hmm.
which you never know if they're getting abused and that sort of thing. So it requires a similar amount of instinct and character judging.
And it's very important to listen to your instincts, because instincts are not just based on nothing. They're based on cues, subtle cues that you are picking up unconsciously in front of you, and you always have to listen to your instincts. Because it's incredibly, incredibly telling. Also, a lot of caretakers are registered with something that's called Trustline. And Trustline does a background check based on Social Security and looks to make sure that someone is not a registered pedophile, that they can look at their driving record, all that sort of stuff. And most caretakers, especially kind of medium to high-level caretakers, are registered with Trustline because it's to their benefit. It makes them look more professional, and you can easily look up their information.
Now, we're going to take one more break with Dr. Berman, and we're not done with this topic completely, but we'll just be right back in just a heartbeat on Health Radio.
Houston, what a great view from space today.
From space, you can see a world of possibilities. I'm NASA astronaut Jeff Williams. I spent 6 months on the International Space Station, but something like that used to seem a little out there for me. So if a kid from a tiny Wisconsin town can grow up to reach those heights, who knows what's possible? What's your vision? Imagination and education can take you anywhere. Learn more at NASA.gov and stock up on math and science, because America needs you to be the innovators and explorers of tomorrow.
When there's a 5-mile backup on the parkway,
an hour wait at the Holland Tunnel. And local transit's delayed? Isn't it a relief to know quality care lives right down the street? Bayshore Community Hospital offers the high-quality care you need, close to home. And not just your primary care, but also diagnostic services that use the same technology you'll find in the city, which means you don't have to go far for MRI and CAT scans, as well as ultrasound, mammography, nuclear medicine, and more. From a simple x-ray to the most advanced diagnostic imaging, Bayshore Community Hospital provides state-of-the-art care with a personal touch. It's all part of our commitment to innovation and being the community hospital you can count on, so you don't have to travel into the city for great care. Turn to Bayshore Community Hospital. We're right here at your exit. For more information, visit www.bchs.com.
You can hear this show again or listen to the all-new online interactive talk radio all about health, wellness, fitness, and medicine. Log on to healthradio.net. Entertaining hosts, expert guests, and important information about every aspect of your health. Live Health Radio or on-demand podcasts. It's compelling talk radio for everybody. Healthradio.net. That's healthradio.net.
I knew something was wrong. I felt pressure in the center of my chest. I had pain in my arms and neck, and I was short of breath. I felt nauseous, and I broke out in a cold sweat. I thought, this is it. I'm having a heart attack. I didn't waste any time. I went to Valley Hospital Medical Center. At the chest pain center there, doctors and nurses quickly evaluated my condition and worked to minimize damage to my heart. Thanks to them, I was able to make a full recovery.
If you have symptoms of a heart attack, don't wait. Call 911. Go to the Chest Pain Center at Valley Hospital, where specially trained doctors, nurses, and other healthcare professionals quickly diagnose your pain and take action. The Chest Pain Center is part of Valley Hospital's Cardiac Center of Excellence. It's where we treat all cardiovascular conditions, including heart attack, congestive heart failure, coronary artery disease, and more. For more information on the Chest Pain Center and the Cardiac Center of Excellence at Valley Hospital, go to valleyhospital.net or call 388-4000. That's 388-4000. The Cardiac Center of Excellence at Valley Hospital.
To call in and be part of the show, ask a question, or make a comment, call toll-free 877-711-5611. That's 877-711-5611.
And we're back. You're listening to Health Radio, and I'm Melanie Cole. We're talking with Dr. Jen Berman, author of The A to Z Guide to Raising Happy, Confident Kids. And Dr. Berman, I take it back. There is really nothing I disagreed with in this book.
Okay.
I mean, really, it's all...
I'm glad I convinced you.
You did. Well, I mean, it's all so common sense. Now, just let me ask you a question totally off topic.
Sure.
Where you are a marriage and family therapist in Beverly Hills,
sure,
do you think there's a difference toward the... I mean, I'm in the Midwest.
Sure.
To the rest of the country in value system and
yes, and
reward,
yes,
system and how the children feel. We call it here, well, my clients call it the Lucky Sperm Club.
Yeah. Yes and no. First of all, I started out my career working in low-fee clinics. So I've been working with people from all socioeconomic backgrounds. And in addition, in my private practice in Beverly Hills, I also keep a few slots open for low-fee patients. So I am exposed to all sorts of things. Plus, when I travel the country doing television and radio and people read my column all around the country, I get exposed to people from pretty much everywhere. And I have to say that I think that parents, pretty much wherever they are all struggling with the consumer culture we live in, kids wanting more and more and more, gimme, gimme, gimme. And whether it you come from a family that is a middle-class family and you can afford to buy your kid two pairs of jeans when you think the right thing to do is to buy them one, or whether you come from a very upper class family and you can afford to buy them, you know, as many pairs of $150 jeans as you want, we're all dealing with figuring out what the right limits are for our children and also helping to raise our children in a culture that has become such a consumer culture.
It really has. And I don't want to fall prey to it.
And it's really hard not to, because the culture doesn't just aim at our kids, and believe me, it does. You wouldn't believe the amount of money that marketers and advertising put in to seduce our kids, but also they seduce us as well. They make us think that we need, you know, the skinny jeans or the bell-bottom jeans or whatever it is to be hip and happening and to feel good. And it's very hard not to buy into that.
Well, it definitely is, just as it's hard not to involve them in all the things that they see that their friends are involved in. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I wonder if I'm not doing damage to them by, on a Saturday, they spend the time gardening with me, pulling weeds.
Nice.
You know, we play, we sit, whatever.
Yeah.
While all their friends are out playing baseball.
Sure.
On teams. And I say to myself, well, okay, so if he was playing baseball, I wouldn't get to weed my vegetable garden.
Sure.
So I'm making the decision sort of selfishly, and I hope that I'm not taking away from my kids, but yet they're involved in all the aspects of this.
Are your kids having fun gardening with you?
Yeah.
Are they saying, I wish that we were playing baseball. Why are you making us do this? Can we please play baseball?
No.
Then I think you're doing the right thing. It doesn't sound like they're missing out on anything, and it sounds like they're having wonderful quality time with Mom.
Because you talk about the importance of the team sports and such.
Yeah, but it's also the importance of team sports for the kids who want to do it. I would never recommend pushing your child into any team sports, and I also don't recommend team sports for really young children. And I think children are being pushed into it at younger and younger ages, and that's not good either.
What's your age limit for starting?
For starting, it needs to be when your kid expresses interest. I think that as a parent, you want to expose your child to things that you enjoy, like you're exposing them to gardening. If you have a spouse that likes baseball or, you know, walking, then I recommend you expose them to those things. But you want to look at what your child is drawn to. I know that when I was a little girl, other kids in class were taking ballet. And I went to my mom and said, ooh, can I try ballet? And then they were trying gymnastics. Ooh, can I try gymnastics? Kids ask for what they want. As long as you maintain that open dialogue and you always say to them, if there's an activity you ever want to try, let me know and I'll look into it for you.
Okay, well, that's really good advice because that answers that worry of mine because I guess you're right. Kids will ask for what they want.
They really do. You know, as long as you maintain that open dialogue, you bet they will.
That's just amazing. Now, before we talk some more, tell people while we have some time where they can find your book, how they can reach you, all that stuff.
Absolutely. My book is The A to Z Guide to Raising Happy, Confident Kids, and it's in all major bookstores near you and, of course, on Amazon.com. And if you want to reach me, you can find me through my website, which is drjen.com, but spelled out DocTorJen.com.
And do you respond to emails and such?
When I'm able to, I do.
Okay, because I always ask everybody that because,
You
know, then if listeners say, oh, well, they're not even going to respond to me anyway, why should I bother writing them?
I always try to, especially when the emails are appropriate.
Well, I mean, I know how that goes.
You catch my drift.
Now, you also talk about teaching children about money.
Yes.
And the value of money. And, you know, mine are so little that if I give them a penny, they're very excited.
Yes.
But I see that kids today, you know, it's more and more and more. Again, with this materialistic culture that we're in.
Sure. And it's important that parents teach their kids about money early on. And I always recommend starting an allowance as soon as your child is old enough to count and to recognize the difference between different coins and to do small addition and subtraction.
Okay, now why do I have to, I mean, you mean like for chores that they do and such?
Well, there are two ways to do allowance. One is to link it to chores where it's essentially work for hire, and the other is to just, here, you get X number of, you get a dollar a week just for existing. To me, it's less important which one you choose to do, and that really is a personal family preference. There are pros and cons to both. But what is important to me is that a child get an allowance as soon as they meet those requirements that I mentioned and that they understand what their allowance is for. You can give your child $10 a week. You can give your four-year-old $10 a week and expect them to pay for the candy at the grocery store. You know, when you're standing in line, they're like, oh, I want that. You can expect them to pay for any toys that they want. You can expect them to pay for those kind of things, and that will be a great way for them to learn how to use money and how to value money. Whereas if you give your four-year-old, let's say you give them a dollar a week, but you expect nothing of them, they'll learn nothing. You don't want to give them money just to have money. You want to give it to them so they have the opportunity to make choices. And by making choices, there will be things that they want that they won't get, and there'll be things that they want that they'll have to save up for, and those are great lessons in life.
Well, it's true, and my children have chores, and they have to do them. They have to empty the recycles, and they have to feed our dog, and they have to feed their little fish, and they have to wipe out the cabinet under the sink where the recycles were. I mean, they've got things they have to do.
Right.
And I worry about offering them money for those things, because when I grew up, those were just considered family chores. You had to do them.
And those are the cons of chores for money, because a lot of the time parents worry about creating mercenary children who will say, okay, yeah, you want me to take out the trash? Sure, that would be $5, Mom.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
And we don't want that. Yeah, we want to create a sense of family where children want to help and participate in the family, but we also want to create opportunities for them to have an allowance so that they can learn about money.
Well, that it makes really good sense, and they do need to learn about it, because when they're asking for all the things that they see on Nick Jr., you know, and I say, honey, we can't afford that.
But I have to say, it's also really funny to watch when children want things, when it's their money and they're paying for things, they make very different decisions than when it's just, oh, Mommy, give me this, and Mommy, give me that.
I guess I'm going to try this advice. I'm going to start trying it today.
I want to hear how it goes.
And I want to see if they make that connection between spending their own money that's in their little piggy banks that they get for various reasons and what the toy actually costs and how much they have left.
And make sure that when you do this, especially since you're changing the rules, you let them know exactly how much they're getting every week, exactly what that money is for, and then you can't pay for those things. If you say, this money you're getting, your allowance, it's for you to pay for toys. If there are any toys that you want aside from your birthday and the holidays where people give you toys, that's your responsibility. That's what this is for. Don't then back down because they say, oh, but I really want that toy. Let them save up for it.
You know, and then the last, we have about 30 seconds, but how do I keep my children from worrying?
Well, it depends on how your kids are wired. Some kids are just natural worriers. And what you want to do is you want to get to the bottom of what it is they're worrying about. Is your 4-year-old daughter having separation anxiety? Is your 7-year-old son having social anxiety? You want to get to the bottom of what it is so you can help address the issue, which is really the most important part.
So you just talk to them and try and find out what it is they're worrying about and then allay their fears and such like that.
And also normalize their fears. Let them have their fears. Yeah, it is really hard when you're not getting along with someone at school. It makes it really scary to go to school. I know. Let's talk about what we can do to help you so it's less scary when you go to school. You want to help them come up with solutions.
That is great advice. I really want to thank you for being on, Dr. Berman.
Oh, my pleasure.
And I hope that you'll come on again because there's a million things that we didn't talk about. It's a good long book.
I would love to come on anytime.
Well, thank you. It's a good read, and I hope that people will go get the A to Z Guide to Raising Happy, Confident Kids by Dr. Jen Berman or drjen.com. Thanks again. Tune in tomorrow to Health Radio. We'll see you then. Bye-bye.